Okay, Luke 6, the second half of what we've been calling the Sermon on the Plateau. Andy already met Tom and has known Linda for quite a while. Good, good. So, second half of the Sermon on the Plain or the Plateau, we're told here in Luke 6 that Jesus descended or came down from the mount after he had appointed 12 of his disciples to become apostles, introduced them to the rest of the group, and then started preaching. And the sermon is similar but shorter version of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, but the timing is different. In Matthew, Jesus appoints the 12 apostles in chapter 10, long after the Sermon on the Mount. In Luke, Jesus appoints the apostles shortly before the Sermon on the Plateau. I mean, in fact, the very next thing after appointing the 12 to be apostles is the Sermon on the Plateau. So probably different, but similar. Now, why does that not surprise us that though they're different, they're similar?
Memories.
Jesus didn't change his mind.
He didn't change his message. This is the message from God, and everywhere he went, it would be this same message. Didn't change his message. Okay, so the first part of the sermon is, again, a truncated version of the Beatitudes. And of course, beatitude means blessed. It's the Latin form of the Greek word for blessed. And so four blessings in the Sermon on the Mount. There's, I think, about 10. Here there are four. Blessed are the poor, verse 20. Bless you who hunger now, verse 21. And weep now, verse 21. And when men hate you, verse 22. Those don't seem like fortunate situations, do they? You're hungry now. How fortunate you are. You're blessed now. You're hated by people. That's a good thing. Is that how it feels to you?
Not always.
No. And then he turned around and said, "Whoa," which means, "Oh no." It's not a, again, not a pronunciation, of judgment, a pronouncement of judgment. It's a an observation of how unfortunate you are to be in that situation. Oh no, like you see somebody about to step on a patch of black ice, and you say, "Oh no," and you're not cursing them; you're just observing their danger. And so he goes into that. Oh no, you who are rich, and you who are well fed, and you who laugh, and when men speak well of you. So those situations where you'd seem like you might be comfortable, Jesus said, "Watch out. Bad things are about to come upon you." Those situations where you're enduring privations and being hated because of me, well, that's the way they treated the prophet, so you're in good company. So he addressed, first of all, he addressed his disciples to have the proper mindset toward their circumstances in life. If you really get along with people and nobody hates you because you're a follower of me, you might not be following me very closely. So pay attention to that. So first of all, number one, he addresses our mindset toward the circumstances in our life. But then he says in verse 27, "I say to you who hear, love your enemies." Now he turns our attention away from what's happening to us and directs it toward what's toward the people who might be the perpetrators of what's happening to us. Say, your enemies, do good to those who hate you. How blessed you are when you're hated. Do good to those who hate you. See, accept the hatred as a sign of you're doing the right thing. And then instead of retaliation, instead of anger, or instead of vindictiveness, or instead of this poison in our mind of get even or judgment, love them. Do good to them. pray for and offer to help and don't withhold and give. Verse 30, give to everyone who asks you. And whoever takes away what is yours, don't demand it back. So there's this generosity of spirit, of love flowing out in various ways. Is that a fair way to say that, Scott? That this represents the love of the Father in me flowing out in various ways. What did Paul say in Romans 5? While we were still what?
Sinners.
Enemies, even sinners, enemies. God loved us, gave us to die for us. Gave. Who am I? I'm a son of my Father. If I'm a son of my Father, what am I going to look like? One who loves and gives rather than one who tries to get even or be vindictive or spiteful of things like that. Verse 31, very important. Treat others the same way you want. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. Whatever you think would be appropriate that they would treat you. You ever cut somebody off in traffic inadvertently? You didn't see them in the lane, and man, I didn't mean to cut them off. How do you want them to respond to that? With grace and patience, because you know you made a mistake. Well, if that's the case, then once you do that to other people, you respond with grace and patience. However you want to be treated by other people, that's how you treat them. Okay? And this is love flowing out. And so he says in 35, love your enemies, do good, lend, expecting nothing in return. I'm not loaning this to you because I can get back with interest. I'm lending it to you because you need it. And your reward will be great. I'm going to ask you a question. Tom, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who's able to provide for you better? You taking interest from the fellow that you loan money to, or God blessing you because you loaned it to him?
God bless.
I mean,
Absolutely.
it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But we sometimes fail to trust the reality of it. When it comes right down to the nitty-gritty of it, we fail to trust that that God can really. You mean I gave this guy $4,000? And I shouldn't expect it back. God will take care of me. Of course. Of course. All right. Verse 36, he says, be merciful just as your heavenly Father is merciful. That word merciful, a couple of different words that might be translated merciful. One is mercy, the other one is compassion. What is compassion?
Like
Look at the two words, compassion,
with
with suffer and passion, suffering, feeling their emotions with them.
empathy and sympathy,
Yeah, it's very
feelings.
similar. Yeah, and empathy, but feeling together, we're in it together type of thing, and that's the way your Father is. Don't judge, you won't be judged, and don't condemn, you'll not be condemned. Pardon, and you'll be pardoned. What do you recognize there in 37? Who does the judging and condemning and pardoning? Jesus does. But so do you.
God.
I mean, you do it to people, right? People get crosswise with you.
Yeah.
People steal and cheat and defame you. They did the Christians. Peter says, don't let anybody suffer as an evildoer, but if as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but glorify God in his name. It was clear that Christians were suffering because they were suffering. He says, what are you going to do to somebody who harms you? Well, if you pardon, then you have a God who pardons you. In other words, God is going to learn from our example how we want to be treated. Is that a fair way of saying it? If he sees that we are compassionate, he'll be compassionate toward us. If he sees that we are rigid and stickler, he'll be rigid and stickler toward us. I can't afford for him to be rigid and stickler toward me. I can't. I want the compassion of God. I want the pardon of God. I want the forgiveness of God. And so I need to show him, by the way I treat you, that that's how I want him to treat me. See that point? Go ahead.
Well, not only that, but it's also better for you in your everyday life to not hold those grudges.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, what is a grudge?
What is a grudge?
Yes. So you park your car?
What did you say, Scott?
A place where you put your car.
A grudge.
A grudge
is a bottle of poison you drink hoping the other guy dies.
Oh. That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's what it is. Wow. So forgiveness is cleansing, mentally, emotionally cleansing.
Yeah, I had something happen one time, and it was very painful, especially the more I thought about it. Mm-hmm. It really just, I've held on to it for a long time. I do my best to be, except that I don't understand where that person was coming from when they said what they said. But I don't know. I try to be forgiving and go on. And
what does it mean to forgive?
To let go, to
that's it.
Yeah. Send away.
It does not mean that they are no longer responsible for what they did. That means you don't hold on to it. You don't hold on to it. You send it away.
Right.
Good. Given, it will be given to you, verse 38. I don't know who the they is, do you? They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. Who's the they?
This one. NIV doesn't say they.
Pardon?
Isn't it your enemy?
Maybe your enemy.
It says given, it will be given.
Given, it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap good measure.
I've always taken that as God. I mean, you may do something to somebody good and they don't even acknowledge it, but God will, in the background, bless you.
Yeah, there's,
that's the way I see it.
The text is unclear. Mm-hmm. People may recognize that about you and have this benevolent attitude toward you. Certainly God would recognize it and send his angels to bless you. The point is, what am I going to do? What do I look like? See, love your neighbor, bless, pray, don't demand back, forgive, be compassionate. And what is my life going to look like if I'm that way?
Loving.
Pardon, forgiven, heaped up, overflowing.
Well, that's what I think the day is the people we're going to see, everybody's going to see that.
Yeah.
And they will know that you're a person of character.
That's what I was saying, that the they in here is, I think, obscure on purpose,
mm-hmm.
for us to have this conversation.
It's not a capital T.
Even if it were, there'd be a capital T put in there by the translators, because the Greeks, when it was written, didn't have capital letters.
Oh. There you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Nor spaces.
Nor punctuation marks. It was designed to be read orally, not printed out. But what kind of life do you want? See, Jesus is saying, consider yourself fortunate when bad things are happening because you're following me. Mm-hmm. Don't wish for the life that the people not following me have. I've seen that too often. And then he says, when bad things are happening, respond with love, respond with kindness, respond with forgiveness, respond with a giving attitude, because it will be poured into your lap, pressed down, shaken together, running over. What picture do you have right there?
A cup that's just being poured into and it's overflowing.
Yeah.
Or a bag that's just being poured into and it's the food is just spilling out.
Yeah.
It's your food.
The shaken together, pressed down, shaken together, makes you think of grain.
Grain, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So, yeah. For by the measure, the standard of, by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return. What that tells me is that God is watching how I treat people. He says, that's how you have set the standard for me to treat you. And how much love do you want to receive from God? Pour it out to people. How much forgiveness do you want to receive from God? Pour it out to people. You see where we're going with where Jesus went with that? Now that's review, okay? New material. He also spoke a parable to, what's a parable?
It's like an illustration story.
Two bulls.
Mm-hmm. What was that, Scott?
A pair of bulls.
Two bulls. Pair of bulls.
Yeah. We're being funny, Tom. The two bulls.
Two bulls. Like a pair of
bulls. Like a paradox is two doctors. Okay, good. What's a parable? Para means beside, and balo means to throw. Something that is thrown down beside. Okay, I don't understand what you're saying here. Let me throw something down beside it that you do understand. That is just like what I'm saying. Okay, so a parable is an illustration of something that is known so you can grasp the message that I'm trying to get to you. So a parable, a blind man cannot guide a blind man, can he? Will they not both fall into a pit? And if I'm a blind man getting ready to cross the street, I don't want another blind man saying, here, let me take you by the hand, I'll lead you across the street. We're both going to get hit, see? Why did Jesus say that? I mean, it's obviously true. So why did he say it? Let's keep reading. And I think as you read more into the text, you'll see this is what I'm driving at. A pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone after he has been fully trained will be like his teacher. Or why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Verse 43. For there is no 42. Good tree. I've skipped over 42 on purpose because it's just a continuation of that illustration. For there is no good tree which produces bad fruit, nor on the other hand, a bad tree which produces good fruit. Jesus hasn't changed his context. He hasn't changed what he's talking about. Each tree is known by its fruit, for men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they pick grapes from a briar tree, but the good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good. The evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil, for his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? This hasn't changed context. He hasn't changed what he's talking about. He's looked at a variety of illustrations of what I think were superficial and bad attitudes that people had toward what they knew. I know.
What if you know you have a bad attitude? Because I know it at home. I lost my wife last year, and I got very angry and very angry and going through a lot of emotions
sure.
and grief. And
yeah,
my attitude has really not been the best.
I guess God probably doesn't know what it's like to lose a mate. He made us like this. He made us to heal through grief. Now, if someone has an arm cut off, they're going to go through all the loss, the pain, the suffering, the agony, the angst of loss. You're going through the angst of loss.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that God, who made us like this, knows that that's what we do. That's how we respond to loss. That you recognize that about yourself is awesome. Because you cannot fix what you don't know is broken. Okay? So, anybody want to chime in with an answer for Tom? How do you fix bad attitudes? Or you look back at your attitude and say, man, that was a bad attitude.
I just blame everyone else.
Yeah, I blame everyone else. That works for me.
It's like the car is, you know, like, oh, you know, I know that
I'm sorry, Candy. It's like what?
It's like the car instance, you know, where
the cars?
Car instance where you're cutting people
off. Oh, the car instance.
And I'm like, you know I've done that before. How can I get mad?
Yeah.
Well, I have a perfect example. I have been driving 100 miles an hour in 35 mile an hour zones. I had to finally get rid of my cars because I didn't want to kill anybody and I didn't really want to hurt myself and end up, you know, paralyzed or worse.
So you saw yourself out of control.
I was definitely out of control, but I wasn't, I was out of control. I just was so angry that I would just floor it and just all around town, up and down 18.
So I've
I,
got a couple thoughts, and I'm sure other people do as well.
yeah, go
But
ahead. But I got rid of the cars, and I don't drive.
you recognize that about yourself. That means you know you can address it. Okay, that's a good thing. That's a place to start. Two, the Bible has a lot of information on dealing with grief and dealing with attitudes. So that's helpful. Three. You can get on your knees and you can talk to your father about this. Open up your heart and say, this is what it's like being me right now. I love you, and I'm struggling and I need your help. And just, complete vulnerability. Four, there are, you need to surround yourself with godly people
That's why I'm here.
who have been in your situation and know what it's like, you can empathize and guide and help you hedge yourself in. So you're not without tools.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But you two lost to me. Different processes, death and divorce, but you know the loss.
Yeah.
But it's still a loss. I
It
mean, there's
is,
still things that
absolutely.
you have to do. Still things trigger things.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the
There's nothing you can
reality
do
that
but go through it.
Yeah,
The reality
exactly.
is death is easier to get over than divorce is because
Yes, it
the other
is.
person is still alive. The what if is still there. So death is final and you can come to grips with it. But surround yourself with good people, Tom.
Well, that's the other thing too. I've just had this tendency to want to isolate, and I know it's not good. Although there's a certain amount of comfort in solitude. I've learned that, but I know that Jesus, not in Jesus' own words, don't forsake the fellowship of yourselves as you see the day approaching.
And then it gets old too, the solitude. It
Well,
does.
it's
It does.
hard to bear one another's burdens, like Paul said in
Sorry,
Galatians
I'm
6.
crunching a cookie. What was that?
Bear one another's burdens implies a shared load. And that's God's solution to the challenges of life. Bear one another's burdens. All right, pressing on. Good stuff. Thank you. What's he getting at it in all of this 39 through actually the end of the chapter? It's all really dealing with the same thing. And I'll tell you what I think it's dealing with. How we use Jesus' teaching. 46 is key. Why do you call me Lord, Lord? Don't do what I say. Now, what is Lord? The meaning of the word Lord. Master,
Master.
okay? In practical terms, the one that I acknowledge has the right to tell me what to do. So why do I call you the one who has the right to tell me what to do and I don't do it? And that's just chucking the corn right down to the cop, pretty much. So if I'm going to call him my Lord, it can't be superficial. A lot of what's going on in here is superficial. A
You mean
blind
here,
man,
here amongst us?
pardon?
You mean here amongst us?
No, in this text.
Oh, in the text. I'm
In this
sorry.
text, it's
Sorry.
a lot of
Excuse me.
superficiality. A blind man leading, here, let me show you how to go, but you have no idea where you're going. Both of you are going to end up in the ditch. Okay? A pupil is not above his teacher. What's he getting at there? You don't know more than I do. Say, why do you think you can go out here and chart your own course when that's not the course I've charted? You're not above. If what's the best you can get? If you're fully taught, read the verse again. Pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone after he has been fully trained will be like his teacher. Now, if you're fully trained, you'll know how to help a brother get out of a fix. You'll know how to lead somebody across the street if you're fully trained. But here you are, superficial, not you. Here you are superficially thinking, I got this down. I can lead you, and we're both going to fall into the ditch because neither one of you are paying deep attention to what Jesus said. Go ahead.
Not just what Jesus said, but self-examination. they're not examining themselves.
And that's true. But I think his point here
Yeah.
is paying attention to the master. Let your life be guided by me, is what he's saying.
Well,
Here.
that the reason I said that is the log in your eye. That is total self-examination.
Yeah. Have you thought about how absolutely hilarious the picture he's painting here is? I got a 2x4 sticking out of my eye, and you got a little speck of sawdust here. Let me come in. How about whack you upside the head with the 2x4 coming out of my eye? I can't even get close enough. But can't I see what's wrong with me? How can I help you fix you if I can't even see what's wrong with me? If I'm really serious, if I'm really serious about examining a life under the microscope of God's word, if I'm really serious, I think that's an important thing to do, which is probably the only reason, maybe not, maybe there's other reasons I could find for picking fault with you, right? I must be better than you because I find fault in you. I'm obviously better.
Well, you know what God says about
God
that.
likes me more
It's
than you
like, if
because
I'm
I
doing
can.
this, you know, so.
Yeah, but follow where I'm going with
Yeah,
this.
go ahead.
If I can find fault with you, obviously I'm better than you. God likes me better. Say, but why am I overlooking my own faults to find fault with you? Because I'm not really taking seriously the need for self-examination. If I were taking seriously the need for self-examination, I'd look at me first, which is what Scott's point, rather than try to find fault with you.
Or even better, ask somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, give me what's the word I'm looking for? Give me a critique.
A critique.
You know,
Give
that's
me a critique of what you see in me. I know I'm blind. What Robert Burns, the Scottish poet, said, "Oh, wad some power the gift to gie us to see ourselves as others see us." Or to translate that in English, I wish God would give me the ability to see myself the way you do. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, there's a Bible text that says, one man's countenance sharpens another, or it could be the same with women. They, we kind of are like mirrors to each other. Well, it's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Jesus' point here is the superficial way you think you know what you're doing. And you're not even looking at yourself. You're applying standards to somebody else that you won't apply to yourself. And he gets pretty vicious in here. You hypocrites. What's a hypocrite?
To
Face
play after.
A play
Play
actor.
after.
It's a technical Greek term for a thespian, one who plays a part on the stage. That's not who I really am, but it's the part I'm playing. And therefore two-faced, but it's a play actor. You're playing a part. You hypocrites, you're pretending like you're serious about learning God's will, but you're just out here picking on other people and not taking it deeply. You're blind and you're not learning from the master. You think you know more than he does. And so he says, there is no good tree that produces bad fruit. Why would he say that in this context?
That's how we know if we're doing okay or
What are these
what's good.
people? What is he accusing these people of doing? Blindly leading other people, for ignoring what the master says, trying to fix people when they don't fix themselves. What kind of fruit is that?
Right.
Rotten fruit. He says, no good tree will bear the kind of fruit you're bearing. Jesus ain't being gentle here. He's being direct. Give me a justification for Jesus being so mean-spirited. That's my term, not his. Somebody might accuse him of being mean-spirited, calling him a hypocrite, saying they're rotten trees because they're bearing rotten fruit.
Tough love.
Tough love. That's a good answer. That's a great answer.
It's kind of shocking to actually snap them out of their lethargy.
Yeah, you're gonna test the seriousness of your devotion to the Messiah when he corrects you and maybe does so rather aggressively. And you say, well, I'm not going to be talked to like that. Or is that how you see me, Lord? So you got two different responses. Which one are you going to bring? Which one are you going to bring? And so he says, each tree is known by its fruit. Men do not, and you know the illustration he's getting at here. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pick a watermelon from a persimmon tree. I'm not going to get anything edible from poison ivy. What determines what fruit is produced on the branch?
What kind of tree it is?
What
we're grafted into?
What is in the heart mm-hmm. of the tree? The root. Okay. What's in the root? Where is that sap coming from?
Yeah. This is all. He who has ears, let him hear.
Yeah, and he's going to say essentially that here in just a minute. And so the good man, verse 45, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart. Here we're getting to the root of it. So we talk about trees and we talked about vines and we talked about figs and grapes. But what he's really talking about is what's going on in your heart. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good. You're a good person. You're good because you're good in your heart. What you treasure in your heart. What do you treasure in your heart? Tom, part of your answer is found in this thought right here. If you treasure those thoughts of anger and hurt, well, that's what's going to come out of you.
It's not that I treasure them. It's just that
what does it mean by treasure? That's I guess.
Well, to me, treasure. To me, when I think of this text,
it's those things we.
Well, that's what you hold on to.
Right? It's what we hold on to. The thoughts that we keep fresh in our mind, the thoughts that we keep there, and that's what the word treasure, thesaurus, the thoughts that we keep there. Okay.
Well, I've been thinking of this text a lot. It's a whatever is true, whatever is just, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, whatever is
if there be any virtue, if there be any praise,
right thing, think on those things.
And that's coming up in my mind a lot.
Good.
Over and over again.
Good. Good. And that's why they're there. I mean, that's why those verses are there, so we can have those memory grabs that we can play. Yeah. And treasure them in our heart. You see what I did there? You treasure those thoughts.
Right.
Those are the ones you hold on to. Those are the ones you store. And out of the good. Pardon?
It's the only way.
It is.
It feels good to me to be angry. I mean, and especially when it escalates, and then pretty soon a bunch of walls.
Yeah.
I mean.
Now Paul did say, "Be angry, but don't sin." Jesus, you could see his anger when he cleansed the temple, for example.
Yeah.
Things were not the way they ought to be. And one of my detriments is I don't get angry. It's just things that aren't right. Well, I don't let them anger me, which means I don't get any steam in my boiler. See, I don't get the power to address them. I wish I could
get too much steam. Too much going.
Well, yeah. So you know, there is a balance, right?
Yes.
But exactly. Here, the good treasure, treasuring those thoughts that will produce good. Can I say it that way? Mm-hmm. There are thoughts in the text, like the one you brought up. There are thoughts from the text that if we treasure them, they will produce good in our lives.
Right.
And kind of like if you had a cup full of mud and started pouring clean water in it, how long would it be before the cup was full of clean water?
Well, it's all got clean water for quite a while.
Well, not really. It depends on how much you put in there.
And how fast you're filling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
blowing out with a fire hose, it could be cleaned.
The point is flushing out the evil.
Yeah.
They're flushing out the bad thoughts with the good thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. So he said, and this is an important thing, for his mouth speaks from what fills his heart. So, Linda, Linda R. Would you ask me if you could borrow a quarter?
Can I borrow a quarter?
I'm sorry, I can't give it to you. You say, why not?
Why not?
I don't have one. I can't give what I don't have. Say, I can't give what I don't have. Out his mouth speaks from what fills his heart. If there's not hatred or bitterness or contempt in my heart, I can't speak it. So hold on to treasure
I see.
what is
That's
good.
an aha moment for me, right?
Awesome. Appreciate
Yeah,
that.
wow. Good.
Good. So he says in 46, why do you call me Lord? Lord, don't do what I say. We've talked about that. If he is my Lord, well, let me follow. Now, what follows are two, the only two choices you have when you say he's my Lord. Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and acts on them, okay, so there's one guy. Look down to verse 49. But the one who has heard and has not acted. There's two possibilities. You hear what Jesus said and act on them, or you hear what Jesus said and don't. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? So I'll show you. If you come to me and you've heard from me and you act on what I said, that's like a building a house. A man who, look at this, dug deep. Boy, make some hay on that one. How deep do you dig into God's word? Just kind of a, there's some people that use a hunt and peck system, open the Bible, point to verse, read it, or sign up for a verse of the day from one of the radio stations.
My wife wants to call that well, not Russian roulette Bible.
Yeah, you
Yeah.
know.
He point to a text and read it anyway. Once in a while I do that. Not
You
very often.
heard about the guy that tried that three times, said, I can't understand the Bible, so he quit. No, he opened up and said, Judas went out and hanged himself. God didn't want me to do that, so he opened up and says, go down and do likewise. And he opened up the third time and says, whatever you do, do quickly.
Oh.
And he gave up. And he says, I can't understand the Bible.
It's important to take things in context.
Yeah, and that's what
Yeah.
dug deep. See, dug deep.
Yeah.
So you got these people that just use the spot verses. Here's a nice verse. Here's a nice verse. And they don't look at the context. Okay. So then there's those who take, will read the whole thing. Would it be surprising to hear that Hitler, Adolf Hitler, had memorized the Bible or portions thereof? Doesn't do him any good, but he knew it, okay? So he didn't dig deep.
You might
He
not have gone through
just
it.
put a veneer over your life. Have you ever heard of this phrase, the sausage skin without the sausage? What would a sausage skin without the sausage look like?
Flat.
Now it looked like a sausage. You look, wow, sausage. But there's nothing in it. And so just superficial. Just superficial. You know what superficial means?
It's like on the
On the
surface.
surface or above the surface, actually.
Above.
Yeah. And so there are people who read and read and read, but they don't plow and plow and plow. They don't cross connect. They don't see. And we're going to see a connection here that you may have never seen before. The fly has invaded the room. Okay. Candy called out the saw a fly and called out the SWAT team. All right, back to seriousness. So Jesus gave two choices. The one who comes to me and hears my word and acts is like a man building a house who dug deep. And I just can't help but emphasize, as you read the Bible, keep reading it. Read it again and again and again. It's like, I don't know if you've ever done this, Scott, but I wanted to turn my backyard in Indiana. I wanted to turn the lawn into a garden. So I borrowed a fellow's rototiller and I went across it and it looked like it didn't do a thing. And I went across it again. And I must have gone over that ground 10 times with the rototiller before I had the depth I wanted. The first time it didn't look like it did anything. Second time, a little bit of change, but not much. It just, and the Bible reading is like that. You go over it and over it and over it and over it and over it, and you get deep. Sometimes you'll say, I want to pursue this concept. Maybe you'll see Jesus say something, and it's like what Paul said over there. It's like maybe what Isaiah said back there. I'm gonna find all the places where that concept is talked about, and I'm gonna try to dig into it. Look at that word, dig into it, dig into it. I love it. I love it when it's Thanksgiving dinner and they say dig into it.
You know, Rod.
Yeah.
When you're talking, how many times have I read the Bible now? How many years ago was that?
14, 15.
14, 15, 16.
All the way through.
Well, 2008, I came here.
Okay.
So you're talking 16
years. That's 16 years, yeah.
So it's probably 14 years. Now, when you're talking, if I spout it out every time, what you say triggers something in my mind,
yeah.
We'd never get done.
No.
Because.
And it ought to do the same thing. To everybody who reads it, mm-hmm. You're reading through Isaiah, that triggers a thought that you I'm reading through Isaiah right now, six chapters a day, repeatedly, just over and over. I'm just trying to fill my mind with Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading through and say, man, that's Matthew, or that's mm-hmm. Peter, or that's Moses. And you see the connections. They're everywhere, but you don't see them until you plow into it. And so Jesus said, if you come to me and hear my words and act on, it's like a man who dug deep and laid a what?
Foundation.
Foundation. What's a foundation?
Build on.
That's what you can build on. The stability of whatever you build. You want to build a life? You build it on a foundation of Jesus that had been dug deep. Because the flood's coming. And when the flood arose, the torrent burst against that house and couldn't shake it because it had been well built. But so here's the other choice. You hear it, you don't act on it. You hear something that, like some of you have heard things tonight that were aha moments or touched something or made you think of something. Now you've got two choices. You can go home and let it just kind of fade, or you can act on it. You got two choices. Okay? Jesus said, you've heard, but not acted. Well, that's like a man to build a house on the ground. You know, you build a house on the ground, and it's going to be fine for quite a while. Nothing shaking in your life. But a storm comes along like the one you faced. What's it going to do to you if you just superficial faith? You're going to be blown away. Now, here's the piece where the deeper study, I had an aha moment. Flood and torrent were terms that were used of national invasion. Isaiah 8, for example. The Assyrian army was seen as a flood that came through the Palestinian plain and wiped out all the nations that are in there. 40 years from this statement here, the Roman Empire was going to come in like a flood. Revelation 12 mentions the river that Satan spewed. That's this same flood. Now, all of us have the application of if we build, dig deep and build firm, when the storms of life come, we'll be stable. But those people were facing, they were facing what was worse than the Holocaust. They were facing what Jesus called and tribulation, the great tribulation that was nothing like it had ever come before or would come again. They were facing that. That was the flood they were facing. He says, and he's preparing them for that. Now, here's my point. If Jesus' words would equip common people, ordinary people, to be able to face the kind of invasion and privation that the Roman army brought, then Jesus' words can equip you for every storm your life will ever face. So my admonition is dig deep. Don't be satisfied with a superficial or spotty knowledge. Say, I want it all, Jesus. I want to know everything about you. I want to know you well. You know what Jesus said himself about that in John 17? He says, this is eternal life, that they know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom you sent. To know God intimately is eternal life. So I'm advocating and pleading with everybody who listens to this, dig deep. Don't be satisfied with superficial answers, spot knowledge. Go deep. Any thoughts? Got 12 minutes to cover the next 10 verses.
Something that popped in my head earlier is a text, there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors.
Yeah, that's in Proverbs. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why you don't face your problems alone, especially. That's why you don't make major decisions without consulting.
I've heard if you ever spend over a certain amount, like a couple hundred, you want to wait at least 24 hours. Especially like you're buying a new car or a used car, you want to maybe give it 48 hours before you really make that decision.
Yeah. And in your case, you want to wait a year.
I have.
Before you make a major decision after your wife's death.
Yeah, she died June 5th last year.
Oh, okay. So it's been a little more.
It's been about 16 months. Yeah.
Because, you know, in that year, in that first year, there's a lot of first things that you suffer by yourself.
I am not one who likes to live alone. And I'll just give a brief example. When I was living, I'm in the middle of five children. I'm the third of five. And when I first moved out on my own, at the age of about 17, my dad basically said, okay, I'm going to move to, because I was born in San Francisco, California. He said, I'm going to move back to San Francisco, but you can't move with me. And you're going to have to, you know, I'll buy you a used car. You can get a job. You can get a place to live, but you can't come with me. And he put me up in a motel for 2 weeks, and I was so miserable.
Yeah.
Being alone. Yeah. I was getting every newspaper I could find and looking up, you know, rooms for rent. And I within like a week, I found a woman, a 49-year-old woman that had an 11-year-old son, and she had a room. And she interviewed me, and they screened me, and it was like, okay. And I moved in with her for about 9 months. But I hated being alone.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway,
that's 10 minutes, 10 verses. Chapter 7, Centurion.
Chapter 7
now. Okay. When he had completed all his discourse in the hearing of the people, he went to Capernaum. So that tells me that the Sermon on the Plain was somewhere around the Sea of Galilee, because Capernaum is at the top west corner of the Sea of Galilee. And a centurion, what's a centurion? Centurion.
It's a Roman soldier.
Roman soldier with 100 men under his that's why he's a centurion.
Centurion. Like century.
Means he has 100 men under his control. And so he had a slave, not 100 soldiers. He might also have household servants. And a centurion's slave, who was highly regarded by him, was sick and about to die. When he heard about Jesus, now what does that tell you? When he heard about Jesus,
people are talking about him.
Word was getting around.
Yeah, word of mouth is spreading rampantly, especially up in Galilee. That's where he did a lot of his early of his ministry. And so he heard about Jesus. He sent some Jewish elders. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. The centurion was able to convince the Jewish elders to go on his behalf. What does that tell you?
He had influence.
Well, he had a good relationship.
Yeah, that's unusual for a Jew.
Very unusual. That was a hostile
tinderbox.
Yeah. Anyway, and asking him. So the Jewish elders go ask Jesus. That's kind of an interesting dichotomy too. Let the Jewish elders will ask Jesus to come. Why not ask the priest or they'll ask Jesus to come and save the life of the slave. When they came to Jesus, they earnest, this is the Jewish elders now. They came to Jesus, they earnestly implored him, saying, "He is worthy." Now, why was he worthy of this favor? In their opinion,
He was treating them.
He loves our
Built
nation.
our synagogue.
He built our synagogue. See? He's worthy because he honors the Jewish nation. Let's see what Jesus' opinion is. Because, there's a lot of pro-Israeli feeling in this nation. There's a lot of anti-Israeli feeling in this nation. Our nation. I don't mean that. I'm talking about modern day. And let's see what Jesus' opinion was. Why was this man worthy? Because he stood with Israel. And now Jesus started verse 6 on his way with them. And when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends. Now he sent the elders to bring him. Now he sent friends to talk to him. And he said, "Lord, don't trouble yourself further. Don't come any closer. I'm not worthy." Now, what did they say? "He's worthy." What did he say? "I'm not worthy." What does that tell you right there? Right there.
He's humble.
What else?
He knew the rank, he knew the authority of Jesus.
Maybe.
Fine.
But they were looking through a different standard, weren't they? The elder says, "He's worthy." He says, "I'm not worthy." They were judging by a different standard. Why did he think he wasn't worthy?
He had examined himself.
Well, yeah, but I'm a Roman. I'm not one of you.
So he grew up with.
It could be. We don't know why he came to that conclusion. But my point is, it was a different conclusion than the Jewish leaders in town had. He's worthy of you doing this nice thing for him. I'm not worthy for you to come into my
You know who
house.
that comes to mind is Paul. Paul, who did, he wrote like 16 books of the New Testament, and he calls himself the chief of sinners.
Well, you know why he called himself that, don't you?
Well,
He,
maybe on the road to Damascus, before he was the road to Damascus.
before Damascus,
Yeah, he had
he
persecuted.
was the head persecutor,
Yeah, I understand.
killing the Christians, killing God's favored people. Okay? That was Paul. All right. So the centurion says, "I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof." Maybe he knew the Jewish scruples. "You can't come in because I'm a Gentile and I eat food you can't eat." I don't know what his thing was. I just know that he was different and had a different standard than the elders. "For this reason, I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. I sent for you because I wasn't worthy to be in your presence." You ever feel like that? I'm not worthy to be in the presence of someone like Jesus. The reality is, don't you? None of us deserve it. But
Paul said to come short of the glory of God.
he wanted us to be there, and that's why we can. We don't deserve to be there. And don't you see what this centurion is actually acknowledging? "I'm not worthy to be in the presence of you." He says, "I also, but all you have to do is say the word. You just say the word." What would it take for certain actions to transpire in the state of Washington that President Biden wanted to happen? Would he have to come and be on the spot to do it? Or could he just make a what do they call it?
Presidential
A mandate.
mandate.
Couldn't he could make a presidential mandate from Washington, D.C., and it would happen. Say, I'm a man under authority.
He's got a lot of authority too.
Don't go down the path of politics. Get the point.
Yeah.
He didn't have to be present to make it happen. The centurion recognized, I can tell my servant, I want you to go over there. I don't have to go over there and pick up that bowl. You go over and he'll go do it. I don't have to be present. You don't have to be present for
And he came in
my.
late because he had 100 men and servants under him.
Yeah. And so, but you, Jesus, you have power over sickness. You don't have to be where the sickness is. You can heal it from wherever. Where was Jonah when he prayed to God and the fish belched him up on the sand? Where
He was
was
in the
he?
belly of the
He's in
fish.
the belly of that fish, and that fish was at the bottom of the Mediterranean. God didn't have to be in that fish with him. But so the centurion is recognizing about Jesus, you have authority. I have authority. I tell this man to go and he goes. You can tell this disease from wherever you are to go away and it'll go away. He was reasoning. This is kind of like a parable without a parable. He was reasoning from what he knew to what he could see that Jesus could do. Now, the elders thought that he was worthy because he built their synagogue and loved the nation. Jesus said, when verse 9, when Jesus heard this, he marveled and turned and said to the crowd that was following him, I say to you, not even in Israel have I found such great faith. I haven't found anybody that's got the kind of faith this man has in the nation of Israel. Why did Jesus treasure this man? Because he built a synagogue?
Because of his faith.
Because of his faith. Because of his faith.
Authority of Jesus to the connection to God.
Because he believed Jesus could do what he's asking him to do. He believed that Jesus didn't have to be there to manipulate things. You know, like so many faith healers today, they got to be on the spot so they can heal the guy and knock him flat on his back, push him down, you know, or whatever. Jesus could be miles away and still heal. And the centurion knew that, trusted that, acted on that trust, acted on that trust. And then when he came out and Jesus came, he stopping him, said, you don't need to come into my house. You don't need to be here. Just say the word and it'll happen. I know what that's like. And Jesus marveled, marveled. You know what that means? He was amazed. Jesus was amazed at the quality of faith that that centurion had. No wonder he loved the nation and built the synagogue. He loved the God of that nation. When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. Just like the centurion knew it would happen. So, on what basis would you say the centurion was worthy of Jesus healing the slave? On what basis?
This is okay.
I have not found such great faith. Do you believe that God can keep his promises to you? Do you believe that God wants you to have an abundant life? Do you believe that Jesus is the way to that life? It has nothing to do with how big your contribution is or how many things of service you do, like build a synagogue. Jesus didn't ooh and awe over those things, but he stood amazed at the faith. I want him to be amazed at you. And that's what I have for you tonight.